A very warm welcome to you, and thank you so much for having us on. My name is Siya Sangweni, and welcome to this very, very special edition of Democracy Unplugged, very simply themed around a question: inherited freedom or unfinished business? And here's why we decided to focus on this. I'm sure you are not alone when you think of June being Youth Month, and you think about what does it exactly mean to celebrate a month and a specific day like Youth Day? Is it going to be another talk shop? Does it actually make a difference and move the dial? I certainly don't have all of the answers to that, but rather I have an esteemed panel of great guests from different backgrounds, some being political leaders, some coming from civic organizations, and some just like you and me trying to answer these questions for ourselves. So I absolutely appreciate you making time for this conversation. Let me tell you, I know what it means to put aside an hour of your day in this day and age. So the fact that you are listening, you are liking, you are commenting, and you are subscribing absolutely means a lot. So continue the journey with us and continue the conversation with us. Not only do I have esteemed panelists joining us today, but we also have an audience. Hello, audience. All ready to go in part of this conversation. So let us get into it. Do we really have inherited freedom, or do we have unfinished business? And how do we move on from Youth Month and beyond in South Africa? Kicking us off, and let me just introduce who's sitting in front of me here. If I actually sat and I read out his whole CV, I think we'd be here until 2027. But rather, let me say, Mr. Onwabile Lupelwane from the ANC, thank you so much for joining us. And also from Umkhonto weSizwe, we have Ms. Thembile Nkosi, thank you so much for joining us. And then from Defend Our Democracy, we have Mr. Wade Manning. Wade, thank you for joining us. Certainly also going to be part of the conversation from Rise Mzansi, we have Lawrence Manaka. Mr. Lawrence, thank you for being part of the conversation tonight. And then from the Patriotic Alliance, Mr. Kutlwano Seloane, correct? I don't want to sound like the typical Zulu guy butchering surnames. And last but certainly not least, from Action SA, Mr. Advice Chuma. Thank you so much for joining us. So let me throw forward the question that I think is going to spur and get our conversation going. For you, Mr. Onwabile, we're kicking off and talking about freedom. So what does freedom mean to you as a young person in South Africa today?
No, thank you very much, and want to appreciate the platform. In this country, freedom for a person like me, born after democracy.
How much is a
cost of taking a child to university? She may never answer you, purely because the interventions a democratic government has put in place. If you ask a bulk of my community what housing was for them and what it is for me, we grow up in a space whereby it's a continuous black pain every day. But today the youth is living inside RDPs. The youth today has got NSFAS. The youth today has got the world-class education in terms of infrastructure.
And we're a very organized system. So I think for me, it means appreciating the moment. But our spiral continues in terms of the economy. Mm-hmm. Yes, the economy is still in the hands of white Afrikaner males. And you've got to disrupt that system to distribute the economy to everyone in the country for access.
And as a young person, it means I must live to fight for access. And this means I've got to enter university and pass on time, on record time, to give space for the next student. If I so happen that I want to be an entrepreneur, I've got to consult the Gauteng Enterprise Propel, I've got to consult the NYDE. So I've got to be a conscious and awake person in terms of what is there for me, a young person, than to expect that everything will come on the table.
I want to find out from you, when we think about freedom, when we think about being young people in the country today, you are someone who has said, I'm not going to wait to let others decide, but that is why you found yourself now in politics. What does freedom mean to you, and what do you take from the lessons of freedom from the past and put into your work that you do today?
Firstly, thank you so much for having me here today. I think it's a very great opportunity for young women to start joining the conversation, particularly in political spaces, you know, something that's not quite bold, as you see. The first thing I noticed as a feminist is that I'm the only female on the panel. But needless to say, back to the question where you talk about freedom, such platforms, for example, this very example for me, is what freedom looks like, at least. But I think maybe just to start off by answering and saying there's two folds to this question. The first one should be, what does freedom look like? And what does freedom mean? What does it mean? Because those are two different things, right? Comrade, so honorable here.
And it's our first comrade of the night. All right. Yes.
We led the way. You know, it's interesting for us to say we refer to it from Umkhontosi as Magagogo. And it's true to us because the both of us are from Alex. So it's actually going to show a beautiful picture of two young people who are in the political space coming from the very same township, and how, based on this conversation, you'll see whether we shaped, you know, differently, or we somehow have got points of conversions. But, and I don't know him personally, it's the first time I've actually met him today, so it'll also be interesting to see Alex from a different perspective from how I represent it. But I just want to say, in terms of freedom itself, I believe that when we talk about what freedom looks like today, it for me, it's like we've attained political freedom as a nation, as young people. We're able to engage in such discussions, you know, we're able to vote, we're able to go out there and participate politically in that space. And that's why I was able to get into that space, coming completely from a foreign environment as a young activist from Alexandra in different areas. But in terms of what freedom looks like for young people, and that's the next fold of the question I'm responding, this is not what we signed up for. When the youth of 1976 participated, yes, it was for them to get political participation, but in exchange that they may be also able to participate economically, you know, to change the status quo. The question we have as young people, as a young person who grew up in Alex today, is that the same Alex I was born into is the same one my mom was born into, and my grandmother and everyone else. And that's not a foreign story just for Alex, you know. So is this then the same space? I might have come out of Alex because I got different opportunities for me to be able to get into the spaces that I'm in, but is that the reality for most kids in most townships, in rural areas and so forth? Are they able to go to school? Do they have economic participation? Are they getting out of their home situations? And we're not having enough discussion about that. We just want the color of what freedom looks like, but we're not able to interrogate, is this really what we want? And those are the conversations that need to start happening around the room. I don't know if I've answered, but that's a starting point for me. Thank
you. Wade, I'm going to come to you, and I think I'm going to use a very sitting duck of a question. You're from an organization called Defend Our Democracy. What does that mean and say? Is our democracy, when we think of it in the context of freedom, being threatened? Why do we need to defend our democracy?
Sia, thank you firstly for having such an important platform. I must reiterate what the other speakers have said, that we need more of this to happen among the diversity of what South Africa is and looks like, particularly with young people who are not waiting to lead anymore, but who are ready to lead. I think it's in fact the reason that we sit here as young people, that democracy in fact needs to be defended. The fact that we're having these kind of conversations and contesting certain issues and still feeling like certain degrees of freedom that was perhaps promised or fought for in generations prior to us is exactly why democracy still needs defending. Back then in, for instance, 1976, the youth were clear about what it is freedom looked like for them and what they were fighting for. It was dignity. It was the right to speak, to move, to be seen, to have adequate education, etc. Today, I think democracy needs defending because not all that was promised has been delivered upon. When if you were to ask me what my freedom looks like or what freedom looks like today for me, it is really about not having to be afraid. And that comes in many shapes, forms, sizes. I don't want to be afraid that I will not find work. I don't want to be afraid that there are no opportunities waiting for me when I finish school. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be afraid, as many women would say, walking down the street from taking a taxi home or walking through my city, going about my day, experiencing. I don't want to be afraid, number one, is what freedom looks like to me. Secondly, it's about those promises that democracy did, in fact, give to us or say that, as they are laid out in the Constitution, set out to say that we have all of these wonderful rights that we can attain. Are they rights just on paper? Mm-hmm. Or are they rights that have been delivered to us? And democracy needs defending because I think a large degree of what was promised was not delivered. So for many young people today, we probably still live with rights on paper that sound wonderful and that have given us great hope for a period of time, but have also created a lot of frustration, which I think is what we are feeling as a country and as young people today on the ground. And we can all attest to seeing that in various shapes, forms, and sizes.
Cool. So, Wade, you're touching on something, and I want to come to you, Mr. Lawrence, for this one. Wade is touching, I think, on the other side of our question, the unfinished business. If you had to answer that for yourself, what is some of that unfinished business that you think we are dealing with right now?
Thank you so much, Sia, for hosting this very important space, and I hope you'll continue to host more of these so that we can have young people coming into the fray and, of course, articulating themselves. I think there is a lot of unfinished business. I think we are now, you know, more than 30 years into democracy. I'm 23.
Jeez, what was I doing at 23? I couldn't even string a sentence together like you have. But okay, Mr. Lawrence, carry on.
Hey, they're moving at a different speed.
Yeah. And I'm starting there because I think the last time I saw my mom working, I think I was probably 12. My mom is probably 42 or so. So she's gotten to live in this democracy, right? And she's gotten to try and experience what people will call the fruits of democracy. But I think for people like her, and for people like the young people that are unable to access education, the young people that are unable to access jobs after they've gotten their education, this freedom that we speak about kind of feels like we are here to give certain people our vote so that they can experience the democracy. We are here to give them our vote so that they can see the fruits of the democracy. Because I grew up in Ivory Park, and a lot of young people in Ivory Park do not have. A lot of families in Ivory Park do not know what meal they're going to have this evening or even the next day. So I think I'm trying to paint this example, or I want to start here, because I want to say that there is a lot of work that needs to go into building this economy so that everyone is able to attain the fruits of this democracy. I think that we have a problem as a country, and part of the unfinished business really is a leadership that is credible. A leadership that will be able to work for everyone. So I think that, you know, the unfinished business that we have as a country is across all spheres of our lives. From, you know, young people that, you know, spend 50% of their income on transportation because we do not have proper transportation in the country. The young people that are unable to go to school, as I've already said. But to my mother, who's not been able to work for close to 10 or 12 years, not because she's disabled, but because she just cannot get a job.
Okay. Then let's get into this. We've all laid the context of what we're going through in the country right now. Mm. And I don't think it's a shock to anyone, whether we have inherited this freedom or this unfinished business. So, Butlano, I ask this of you. Then why do we not engage as much as young people? We know what's going on. it's not a shock to us when we say we have this issue and that issue, but time after time when elections roll around, we see the fact that young people are not going out to the polls. Why do you think we're not going out to the polls?
Thank you so much, Sia, and thank you so much for the opportunity, Podcast Party. We really do appreciate it. Just real quick, I just want to introduce myself again. I am Kutlwano Seloane. I am the Youth Regional Secretary of the Patriotic Alliance in the city of Tshwane, the capital city, 012 Rea Shuma.
I would not have been able to introduce him.
You know like what? That. You know what? Yeah, here I am. I'm like, he's exposing that I'm not a 2K.
Yes, but to answering the question, why do we not go out to the polls?
Yes, so sorry, I just had to insert that. So I must be honest, young people are just genuinely disappointed with what they've seen in the past. You know, I speak to various young people when we are campaigning, and some of the young people, it's influence, right? Because the friends that have already gotten hurt from voting in past elections, they'll be like, voting is pointless. Like, I voted and nothing happened, you know? And the problem is they don't realize that when you go and vote, the party that you voted for, those are the people that you're supposed to keep accountable to, right? You're not supposed to just be like, you know what, government as a whole has failed me, I'm not going to vote ever again. You must go to the party that you voted for and say, what is the Patriotic Alliance doing in my community, right? Because I put my vote towards the Patriotic Alliance. But the problem with young people, we just vote and then we see no change and we're like, ah, you know what? This is pointless. This is useless. I'm never ever going to vote again, you know? And as young people, obviously peer pressure gets the better of us. And the minute that five or six members of a friend group are also disgruntled and they're like, no, I never want to vote again. Now the entire group is like, no, we also don't want to vote. And that's 10, 15 young people. Now we all just decide, you know what, we'll just sit back, you know? So I would say to the young person that is sitting at home, if you feel as though you don't want to vote because you were hurt about who you voted for and they did nothing for you, go and check and remember, who did I actually vote for, right? Because those are the people that you're supposed to keep accountable.
Okay. So, Mr. Advice, what I'm hearing from Kutlwano is framing voting as a platform that actually doesn't allow young people to be heard. So I want to ask you this. How can the political system encourage the youth to make their voice heard?
All right. Yeah, no, thank you so much. You know, I think I'm very also grateful for this opportunity, you know, so, and I'm very happy, you know. I think it's this space, you know, where we get to know one another. But from what I've heard already, it looks like Alex is highly represented here.
Where are you from?
Alex.
At this point, if you're not from Alex, you're missing out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clearly. Yeah. All right. No, thank you so much. I think you have asked a very important question, you know, and picking up from the already discussed from the colleagues, you know, but from what I'm seeing on my end is that it looks like, you know, democracy have changed its shape. You know, it's no longer about, you know, the ability and the environment where one can exercise their rights to voice their opinion, you know, to decide in terms of, you know, which language they want to speak, you know. In many ways, you know, back then it was more of a kind of expression where, you know, that generation was oppressed, you know, but now it have changed its shape. You know, the characteristics of the democracy now, it must be a place where opportunities are created, where young people feel safe, you know, where young people can get quality education. You know, we have so in the past where young people took to the street and say enough is enough, with fists must fall in terms of the issues of decolonization of the education and the questioning of the education that young people are getting. Does it really prepare us? So within that context, you know, and now when you look in terms of, I frame it as a generational struggle for the young people where now we have transition. When you check in terms of issues of opportunities are not not enough opportunities are being created. You check with the issues of education. Young people are passing their grade 12s, you know, now they are busy writing, but you find that there's no space for them to get that quality education. The ones that progress and go to the higher learning institutions, you find that they find issues with regards to funding, you know. So when all these challenges that now confronting young people, and then young people start to question themselves because they see the political system in front of, and there's that conscious understanding in terms of who must fix this, and then they check and look in the political system and say, ask yourself, why should I participate while, you know, things, it's not translating into the opportunities, it's not translating into the issues of funding, and then that's where now young people find that they are disengaged from the politics. And another thing again, when you check in terms of the language, in political language, even now it's a campaign term, you know, the messaging does not really, you know, speaks to the young people in terms of what needs to happen. We understand that local government deals with service delivery. That's the first layer of the government. But does the political parties and the political system speaks to the issues that affect young people? Do we have enough voice in the political space which can represent the voice of young people? For instance, classical example, ourselves here as young people. If we find ourselves in a campaign because we are young people, you know, the language and how we speak, you know, obviously enough, it gets the interest from our peers. But now we have the gogos, you know, who maybe sometimes they misrepresent these issues, you know, where they find themselves in the spaces, maybe wrong spaces, you know, maybe, let's say, clubs, trying to get interest. I'm just giving an example. Interest, you know, of, you know.
Taking jabs already.
So, and you find that some of those spaces, it's the ones that we are trying to pull our way from as young people to say, no, I don't belong there. I also have a dream. I believe that anyone from the townships, regardless of where they live, they have their dreams. But you find that the political system don't directly speak to them and the issues that they are facing. You can't tell me about the issue of service delivery. I know I don't have a job. I don't have a house. Then you are emphasizing that I must get water while I'm in a shack.
Okay, got you. So, Onwabile and Ste, I want to pose the same question to you, and I want to get your thoughts on this. We have to focus on elections as the mechanism for having our voice be heard. So to both of you, I'm going to ask again, how can the political system actually encourage the youth to make their voice heard?
So the most simple thing, which sounds simple but difficult, when you must implement, is service delivery. People want to be in jobs. They want clean water, they want electricity, they want safe communities and roads. But then you've got a problem in this country where there's a deliberate sabotage of the system. You've got big business, white capital, which has got the power to invest in the economy. One of the crises is to expand the number of parties. The people who are supposed to be investing in the SA economy are funding many political parties to divide a South African majority, which also constitutes what is the market in this country, the consumer, the black people. Then you've got big companies whose interest is to ensure that given the good policies of this country, they still don't participate. Now, how do you have young people being encouraged? But the other part is to remove the benefits of democracy from those who have led governance in the past 30 years. The South African middle class, which is said to be not voting, is the same middle class made by interventions of this 30 years of the inter-government. I count the NSFAS, I count the TVET sector, I count the BEs and various opportunities. But to encourage people to vote one is to increase the national consciousness of our people, for everyone to understand that, for example, you've got a man who's supposed to be a pensioner Zuma, you know, messed up their country, did the worst.
Oh, we're going there.
Yes.
Oh. We're going, okay.
Yes, messed up their country. Then you go open a political party. Mm-hmm. Now, how can people trust that system when you've got people who vote for that person and their party?
Okay, let's pause there. We're going to go there since you've opened that door. But I want Stebile, before you go and answer that, I want you to hear your thoughts. How can the political system actually encourage the youth to make their voice heard?
I think maybe when we talk about the political system itself, it's not a matter of whether the young people are there or they're politically charged. We can see it everywhere in social media. Many young people, not necessarily using a political system, are very, they've got fingers online. They are analytical of the situation in this country. A lot of them have no ties to the history of this country in terms of freedom fighting and all of that. The face of the young people in this country is slowly changing because many of them are slightly getting further removed from what this country's history looks like, and the fact that the political system has to adapt to the kind of young people that are moving in as voters tells you that we must be able to use such platforms to be able to engage young people. Young people, and I'll tell you this as someone who's led the Mkhonto we Sizwe Youth League that enjoyed the most support from young people leading up to where they are in terms of being the third largest political party in the country. Those young people were not caught on social media. Those young people were caught on grassroots level. You would even see a lot of people will tell you Mkhonto we Sizwe doesn't necessarily have the biggest social media standing or plan or strategy, whatever the case might be, because it's a grassroots organization that started on the ground and did not enjoy that much of media. However, those platforms must be caught. The first way young people participate in democracy, and that's something that's very important for all young people to know, is through the vote. Everyone qualifies. It's that one right that every single young South African has got, and they need to go out and exercise by using their choice to say, this is what we want. It's very clear in this country that this country needs a change, and many young people have realized that the system is not working for them. The results are there to show. You know, more than 60% of the young people in this country are unemployed. Young people who are graduates have got all the qualifications, still remain unemployed. There are many issues that affect the young people. Instead of decreasing the issues in democratic South Africa, the issues that no longer even existed prior have come forth, which means the current government that was the government that brought us to the level where we can participate politically is starting to fail in terms of taking the vehicle forward. And that's why we need to reinvent the political system. I do agree, though, with Okombrade Onwabile when he says the emergence of the many political parties, you know, is really diluting what we can do as a majority of South Africans, and in our context, black South Africans who are largely still disadvantaged, right? But I'm not going to only exclude to say black. I'm using black in the term that black people still remain the larger part of the people in this country that have the biggest levels of disadvantage, that still remain or are still facing the spatial inequalities that have occurred as a result of apartheid. So having said that, and just to move on to say, in terms of unfinished business, I was aching to speak about that. The unfinished business is no longer about whether we can participate or not. It's the fact that now that we can participate, how do we use this meaningful democracy to gain back the power to the people who were previously disadvantaged? How do we then say, now that we can vote, we've got the expression, we sit in these rooms, we have these discussions, how do we translate that to real time? The ANC has got no idea. They've been in power for 30 years, they did what they needed to do, but they're not able to transform us to the next stage.
No,
and that's why there's that emergence, right?
Okay.
The stats are there, the facts are there. The fact that youth unemployment keeps increasing, the fact that there's no new ideas, the fact that when they speak, they still speak about the dream, tells you that they're not forward moving. You can't still.
Let's
I'm
just
talking
pause
in general.
Here.
I'm not even talking about him. I'm talking about the general.
We will get to that.
We'll do better.
We will get to that. Let me pause and just get a gauge from the audience. You don't have to actually say who you vote for, but how many people with a show of hands have a very firm party that they vote for election after election? That says a lot. out of the whole, how many hands? There were like three hands out of this whole room have been committed, consistent voters. I'm not going to say much, but they're also political party members here. Don't know what that says about you.
Should I put out my hand?
But wait, I want to go to you then. Isn't this telling? Both Onwabile and Sthembile have spoken about the establishment of various parties diluting this political landscape. But what does that say about the voter today? And what does that say about their satisfaction or dissatisfaction?
I think it says a lot, Sia, about the kind of voter today. I think it says that this voter is educated and logical. They reason. And the reason why the division has occurred is in fact because, and this is no shade to any political party, but DOD is nonpartisan. We stand for civil society and the frustrations or the needs of the people. There's too much politicking. We are too busy politicking and not enough work is actually being delivered on the ground for people. And I think each of us would attest to that, as we already have. We have, as my fellow guest was saying, it's been selling this dream, right? As young people, I'm 2 years shy of 94, you know? And I remember what growing up was like. I remember what was said to me. I remember what was promised. I remember Thabo Mbeki and Desmond Tutu saying, South Africa is alive with possibility, you know? And I remember being told, go to school, work hard, do this, get a degree, da-da-da-da-da-da, you know? And my mom sacrificed everything, everything, her own livelihood, her own dignity, to ensure that I had a chance. And the frustration I have as a young person today is that I look back at what is happening in our political landscape, and you know, what was progressive then is no longer progressive now.
So let me play devil's advocate, and let me come to you, Mr. Lawrence. I'm going to play devil's advocate and say, you are part of Rise, you wake up every day, you have your agenda, you have your team meetings. Wade has said there's too much politicking. Do you agree with that? Or do you feel that you, in your capacity within your party, are working and you do what is absolutely necessary? Is that what has lost voters? Too much politicking?
I think generally there is a lot of politicking, right? So I do agree with him on that aspect, because I feel like we are not organized as a country. And I think that is testament for me, and I think this is the diagnosis, to the fact that the country does not have a firm leadership. We've hollowed out the leadership. And for me, that is what is unattractive to young people. Young people do not have people that they can believe in. They do not have people that can go and actually do the work that they need done, which is ensuring that they actually do get, you know, the work that they need to get, ensuring that, you know, they can get jobs. And by job, I don't mean getting 4,000 rand and the likes, but getting jobs that will allow you to afford a proper living, right? So I think the inability of the leadership of this country to be attractive is what is causing young people to stay away. Because for a lot of young people, we think the entire political system is the same. We think it's the same because it's rhetoric every day, but you do not actually see people that are stepping up to do the work that is needed. And this is why you see the emergence of new political parties, because there's new people and young people that are saying that we are actually tired of that rhetoric that we've been hearing and the politicking that we've been seeing every day. And we want you to get involved. You are from private sector. I don't care which space you belong to or you're from civil society. But if you show what exemplary leadership is and if you can make things move, you need to step up and be in the fray, essentially. So there is a lot of politicking that's happening to answer the question. And this is why we're seeing the likes of Rise and Zanzi coming into the fray and starting to do what is needed. And it's asking the right questions, but starting to steer the ship towards the right direction. And this is why we also enjoy the support of a lot of young people, because we see that, you know, We've got a leadership crisis in this country, and if we do not stand up as young people and arrest the decline, I fear of what 30 years from now South Africa is going to be.
So, Kotlano, how is the PA ensuring that their leadership is attractive, that they are dealing with the unfinished business that a lot of young people feel today? How are you as a party ensuring that you are attractive to young people?
Yeah, thank you so much. That's such a good question, because I think it's one of the most proudest thing that I could say about my party, and that is that we have young people at the forefront. And I'll give you a various list, right? Our MEC, he's 33 years old, and it's Irvin Botha, and he literally sits in the executive cabinet of the Premier, and he is a young person. We have Jasmine Pettersson, right? I'm sure many of you have seen her in Parliament, right? Having engagements with Cyril Ramaphosa, right? And she's literally 24, 25 years old. I mean, to a young person like me, I'm sitting at home and I'm like, wow, if Jasmine can literally go to Parliament and have discussions and not feel intimidated, then I can definitely do that, right? And even in our party, right, our Secretary General, our Deputy Secretary General, they are both young people. You know, they are under the age of 35. So it shows that in our party, we do not shy away from putting young people at the forefront. In fact, we want them to be inspired, you know, just as much as you see how young people get inspired when the Springboks win the World Cup and stuff, right? We want the same thing, right? We want our young people to appear on the TV, in Parliament, in Council, so that they can see that, you know what, if someone as young as me is sitting over there in cabinet doing the right things, then I can also do the same thing. And that means that that person there is advocating for my needs as well, you know?
Okay. Advice, perhaps someone might be listening to this, watching this, and actually saying, I don't care. You talk about elections, you say that's how my voice is heard, but I've had to work really hard as a young person and have private medical assistance, or then I move out and I have to pay for private security. Even if I'm still living at home, we make our own means and I don't rely on government. What do you have to say to the person who sees the elections rolling around and they say, I don't care?
All right, yeah, no, and thank you so much. You know, I think, you know, maybe just to rewind back to my colleagues in terms of what they say, you know, particularly in terms of the number of political parties, I think those that are in business and those that have studied strategy, you know, in their academia gene, they will tell you that there's a red and a blue sea, you know. So from the political landscape, it clearly that, you know, the blue sea, it's open, and that what necessitate many political parties to be formed, it's clearly that, you know, it's a failure, it's we are failing, you know. So hence, you know, more people are coming to the ground, you know, to say, you know what, we can be the solution. Hence we see that, and to dismiss that is to dismiss the democracy that we are here speaking about, you know, because that also form part and parcel in terms of we can't restrict and say, you know, this number of political parties must exist, and we go back and say, you know, we have democracy. If that was the case, we should not have had many liberation movement that they've had before. Hence they kill other liberation movement and now behaves that they are the only one who have fought for the freedom and dismiss our history, you know. So, but to go back to your question, you know, it's very important for ourselves as young people. What you are saying, to say, when we see young people say, no, I don't care, you know, I have my own private security, I have my own private health care, that's a classical failure of the government, you know, because once we are continuously substituting some of the services that should be provided by the government, what is the government doing? You know, hence now we find so many cars on the road because the government is failing to provide the basic, you know, reliable transportation that can take people to work, you know, because even that work that people are supposed to move to go to is not being created. So hence now, if you check, particularly now with regard to where city of Johannesburg was, you know, while it was led by our president, Herman Mashaba, hence we are saying he has unfinished business. Look at in terms of the crisis of the student accommodation in the inner city. How many dilapidated buildings that clearly represent lack of political will. Many young students, you know, who have been privileged enough under difficult circumstances. Someone's coming from Eastern Cape, someone is coming from Limpopo, someone's coming from Northern Cape. They want to study University of Johannesburg, VETS, and other many colleges. Where do they stay? Look at this inner city in terms of how filthy it is. So these are some of the things that, you know, look at in terms of the issue of safety. We need more JMPD so that, because not anyone and everyone can afford the private security. Even if you afford the private security, it will be within your private space and your private property. But what happens when you are driving on the road, you stop on the robot, the next thing you are being hijacked. So that's a classical example to say, don't be a selfish person and say, no, you know what, I'm so that I'm fine. Because you still use the public roads. You still interact with the public in one way or another when you are going to shopping. And that needs the political will and the political leaders that will prioritize the safety of each and every resident. So hence, to make sure that we are all safe, we need more JMPD. We need to make sure that, you know, we redevelop the inner city, which will also create employment for the young people. And not only employment, but also to the space in terms of the housing crisis. I think my fellow young people who are from LX, they will understand. Now we are seeing a new phenomenon in LX where people are building upstairs, you know, which is on its own. Someone can look at it and say, no, this is illegal bylaws and what. But what creates that? That tells us that, you know, people don't have place to stay. You know, there's no family settings.
Wade, you wanted to quickly jump in on that?
See, ya. Again, I'm going to bring us back to what is reality on the ground.
Yeah.
Disappointment happens when you are blue-ticked.
What do you mean by that?
When you are sending messages to your friend, who in this case is government or the party in charge or the official in charge, and you keep sending messages, you're checking in, you're trying to get involved, and you are blue-ticked.
Okay.
And over time, when you are blue-ticked, you start to feel like, hey man, something's going on here. You start to get frustrated. If that was a friend of yours that you trusted to deliver on certain things, that promised you certain things, you know, your character gets questioned. Mm. And in particular for local government elections, when people are looking at that ballot, in fact, they need to be looking at people's character. And can you vouch for that person's character to actually deliver what's required, because what it has removed, Sia, the absence of that, the apathy, this delay of service delivery on steak on a plate, has created this environment in local community where our people are living without dignity anymore. I mean, there are two ways I think that you can look to see if there is dignity within a community. How are you treating your early childhood development and your young kids? And lastly, how are you looking after your elderly people?
Okay.
If they are not seen and taken care of, then you've got a clear understanding of what is going wrong in that economic system and in that community.
So I want to flip this conversation slightly and go to all of our political representatives in the room this evening. It's very easy to talk about what you are doing and what you are doing right. But I think, and I speak as a voter here, I'd like to hear where you acknowledge you have fallen short, where you might have disappointed the voter. And that's not to poke holes at your organization, but rather to say, we acknowledge this and we're working towards fixing this in the context of freedom. Not an easy conversation to have, but let me hear. Let's just be frank here. Mr. Onwabile, let me start with you. Where you go, I acknowledge that we have not done this or we have not succeeded in this and we are fixing it.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem within the ANC is to manage consequences. Everything that happens, there must be accountability. And, you know, it has had a bad luck of not being able to manage infiltration of the apartheid. There were spies which ensured that the ANC failed internally. Most of them opened parties. But also,
right, we're getting to the audience soon, yes.
But also is to be working, you know, with questionable characters like gating, you know. And those things affect the trust that people have in the ANC.
Okay.
And the other part, yes. The other part that I think we should have done better was to properly manage South Africa's capital to ensure that there's a domestic uplift of domestic businesses to ensure that we really don't have to depend on the people who were the previous apartheid collaborators.
Okay, all right. So what would you say has been a shortcoming of the
anchor? I think the last round, you missed my opportunity to respond shortly to something. But
it is fair game. So open system.
But I'm a patient woman, you know. They call me CDE sniper for a reason. I can wait my turn. But I think maybe just to start off, without degenerating this conversation to be about President Jacob Zuma, I believe this is a youthful conversation. So I don't want it to drag it to characters of leaders who are not going to be assisting us in terms of the agenda that we need to push as a generational mission in this context. I do, however, want to say that same President Jacob Zuma is the one president throughout his presidency that focused on working on issues of skills, making NSFAS available to young people in this country, building universities and making more young people access, you know, building roads and doing so many other things. Those 9 wasted years that we read about on social media, when you actually go do the facts, and I'm not lying, anyone right here in this room can take out their phone and go on Google, you can do it yourself, you know. What did President Jacob Zuma do in terms of youth development or the development of this country between the presidency up to today? But we can move on in terms of what you've spoken about in terms of whether or not,
What are shortcomings?
Shortcomings, perfect.
That you can point.
So the Mkhonto we Sizwe Party luckily is in its inception. So this question is generally a nice campaigning question for us because we haven't really done any damage.
Are you saying we have done nothing wrong?
No. I'm not going to say we have not done anything wrong, but we have not yet been in political power for us to have implemented. Can I get my opportunity? I'm going to come back to the facts.
Yes.
I'm going to come back to the facts, right? I mean, maybe to start with the critique, because it would be stupid of me as a leader in the political party or someone representing the party in a public platform to say, oh, everything is smooth sailing. I mean, you can see everywhere we are. Firstly, what the MK party has managed to do is that in its first...
What are the shortfalls?
Shortfalls
Let's get
first.
Straight to that. Yeah.
Okay,
we
shortfalls.
They're shortfalls themselves, the entire team.
Okay.
Shortfalls.
I can take it from anyone else, not the ANC, who's been in power for 30 years and have failed to do anything. From anyone else, maybe. But I want to say that one of the shortfalls that we've seen in the MK party is that while it encourages generational participation in terms of politics, young people, all people, most of it front-facing at the high senior level is older faces. So that's definitely one of the shortcomings that I've seen as a young person in the organization to say, we're an organization that values generational leadership because we understand that, one, that all people must be able to transfer some knowledge, some experience and advice. Yes, young people must be given platform to lead. But you can see in the many political parties where it's just young people that there isn't that a push or leader, because we're an African nation. Remember, in a household, you've got umama no baba. You know, if there isn't a father or a mother figure, and I'm going to get back to why President Jacob Zuma is still part of the leadership, even though he'll never get back to be a parliamentarian, he'll never get to be in any legislature, and he doesn't have interest of any of those things, but he's there to first teach us, this is why we started the struggle, this is where we are at. We're missing that memory as the young people of this country, because we go out here with all sorts of ideas because of all the things that we want economically, but we don't actually understand the history of our country. And that's why the MK Party has got a different flavor and is a grassroots organization, because it realizes that somewhere in the fall of democracy, it still needs to be at grassroots level. It cannot be about economic participation. Yeah. You'll see that why the solutions that are being brought forward.
Okay. Yes, I have to just move on for the course of the conversation. For you, I want to find out from Rise Mzansi's perspective, what do you think maybe have been some shortcomings? Yes. And how are you resolving or solving them?
Yeah. So look, we are a fairly young organization, but yet a very powerful one at that, given the fact that, you know, we have, you know, different leaders that are actually doing great work, from SCOPA to the impeachment committee and to having an MEC as well in the province of Gauteng. So I think the one thing that I can say we've not done well, and this is what all the political parties are not doing well, is making enough noise so that the disillusioned young people, the young people that have checked out, can actually join. And this is why we go out every day and we organize, and we organize young people, and we show them a credible leadership that can change this country. I was in Ivory Park, we were in El Dorado, we were in Orange Farm. I can count them. We continue to go and show a leadership that is dreaming up and working towards a country that is functional. So I'm not going to be long, but I think that the shortfall there is the fact that we were unable to make the loudest noise to show the young people what, you know, getting involved means. I think with the three seats that we have, we are doing a lot. So imagine if you were to have 10 representatives of Rise Mzansi in parliament. I mean, we are louder than the MK. How many seats in parliament. I'm being very honest, yeah.
Okay. You've got more money, yes. Say, I've got more money than MK. Yes.
This guy is
going to degenerate.
Where is the PA improving? What have been some of your shortfalls and how are you improving?
No, I see the jabs are being thrown out, and yeah, it's getting very heated and exciting. I must be honest, I think on our perspective, it has to be with the conflict resolutions and the issues that we face in our coalitions, you know, because obviously in the Patriotic Alliance, we are unashamedly unafraid to work with different parties, right?
That is why.
Excuse me, can I finish, ma'am? Wow, let's be respectful, right? So, like I'm saying, we are a party that is unashamed. We are going to work with every party, right? And even in the GNU, that's why we have the minister, right? And then you see in places like the Johannesburg Council and stuff, we have various issues because we put our best foot forward to work and make sure that we bring service delivery. But when you have other people in cabinet that are slagging and not doing their work, it brings a bad reflection on everybody else.
So people,
you know,
wasted their votes on your MPs. Is that what you're saying?
No, my leader. All right, but let me just finish my point, right? To say that we need to work better. We need to work better at working with these other parties. In as much as I hear jabs from the ANC leader over there, even though he realizes that literally the ANC Youth League president was complimenting Gayton McKenzie, and he's saying that he's the only minister that is doing phenomenal work. Do you understand? So you realize...
Because I feel like I'm not representing my party.
But all right, you know, let me settle down. That's why.
No, but it's
important. It's important because my briefing is not that I'm going to be here speaking political. That's why
all.
I even wore my Bafana jersey, and I didn't bring it.
Moving
on.
Thank you. Let's round off this.
We can
point
fix it quickly.
Question.
We still have time.
Let's round off this question from you, sir. What are some of your shortcomings? And then we open up to the audience. So what are some of the shortfalls from your part and how are you improving it?
Yeah, no, I think one of our shortcomings is that, you know, if you check our members of parliament, you know, they're doing a phenomenal work in terms of, you know, we are there. Yeah, no, definitely. Check the bills that have been introduced to parliament. No, that's a shortcoming that we are not amplifying this more. And if you check in terms of the city of Johannesburg, you know, where we are the third largest political party, you know, majority of ourselves, myself included in that mix, you know, we have lots of young councillors. We are below 35, but we are not amplifying that to tell young people to say, look at this particular party, you know, where young people are interested, you know. So I think it's within ourselves as young people, we have this opportunity, you know. Actually, say in the city of Johannesburg Council, we have a lot of young people, but you know, there's not much that we are doing to the community to ensure that we bring more young people. But I think we are working on that to ensure that, you know, young people can see themselves within us, so that at least when we speak in this kind of platform, we'll at least shy away in terms of maybe praising, but we also acknowledge in terms of what needs to be done so that we can have more voices where young people are encouraged to work on at the grassroots level. Because one of the biggest mistakes that is happening, you find that brilliant young people doing well in higher learning institutions, but when the humility part to go to the ground and do door to door, you find that someone say, no, I might be overqualified, they, you know. So that humility part, you know, thank you.
I'll accept that. Here's what I'd like to say before I open up to the audience. It is very easy, not saying it is not valid, but it is very easy to point fingers at what your neighbor is not doing. Very easy to do that. And I think it would be a disservice to this conversation and this platform to get stuck on that. We can tweet what your manifesto is versus what your neighbor's is. We can have that all day. But let us take advantage of the fact that, and not to toot Podcast Party's horn here, but the fact that we have five different political parties in a civil and respectful conversation. Respectful. The votes speak for themselves. Yeah. Whether or not there should or shouldn't be this many political parties, the votes speak for themselves. Yeah. Evidently, we want diversification. Yeah. Evidently, we are not satisfied by just one political party. So let us frame the questions and our comments around how do we move on forward and collaborate and work together for the betterment of our freedom and to finish this unfinished business that we have posed. So I'm going to open up to the audience and say, may I take three questions? I will now take 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the six hands that have quickly gone up. Here's what we're going to do. Please introduce yourself, quickly get to your question, and let us know who you are directing it to so that we can cover the whole range of questions. I think that's fair, correct? All right, let's go to the gentleman right there. Hi, so please stand up and introduce yourself.
So I'm Kyle Steenkamp, representing the Patriotic Alliance Youth League. I'm the deputy chairperson for the province. And I've got a question for my fellow peer from the PA, Kuklon. It's actually two questions. Is it fine?
Okay, let's see how quickly you go through the first one. Question is?
So the first one, for the reason that we're on the topic of youth, given the high levels of youth unemployment in South Africa, what practical solutions does the Patriotic Alliance propose to create sustainable jobs and economic opportunities for young people? Number one.
Very quickly, your second one. Let's see.
Number two, what is the Patriotic Alliance doing to empower, develop, and create sustainable opportunities for the youth of this country?
Okay. I wonder what the car ride here was like. Yeah, so listen. Good one, I'm going to ask you. Good one, what's your answer to that very quickly?
All right, I'll be quick. I'll even answer them both combined, right? Because the thing is, in South Africa, we've moved too far from becoming a service-based economy instead of being one that is production-based, right? Like, we are the most creative people in the whole world, right? In Africa, right? We should be producing more than we are focused on becoming the best financial sector, right? Which is also good. That is amazing. But the jobs are at us actually producing our stuff instead of actually just mining out things and then exporting it to China, exporting it to Europe, and having them actually create the final product, right? Like, we have young, brilliant, talented minds that are creative enough that when we actually mine out those raw minerals, let's be the ones that that produces the Rolexes. Let's be the ones that actually produces all these amazing things that can create sustainable jobs, right? Because end of the day, that's what we want.
Thank you so much. A question at the back there. So please stand up, introduce yourself, and who are you directing your question to?
Hi, it's a couple of people and a bit of a comment at the start. I hope I won't take too long. Firstly, there's that many political parties. Oh, I'm Ramela Mudise. I'm a researcher at the Wits Center for Diversity Studies. I'm non-partisan. I'm here to kind of like get to the bottom of the solution. We have this many political parties because we have bourgeois pragmatism.
We have what now?
Bourgeois pragmatism. So we're looking for quick fixes.
Googling tonight. Yes.
Yeah. We're looking for quick fixes to problems that are far deeper. We've misread the problem quite deeply. Wade, you touched on how your mother sacrificed so much. Very touching and very important, but that's a story of a lot of South Africans as a subscription to something that will give you mobility. One day whiteness will face you and you will not have anywhere to go. So we have kind of misread the problem. We have antiquated metrics, that's why we have this much unemployment, because you look at the education system, where will those people go into? The question I guess I have to you guys as a panel, and maybe I'll leave the last one to the ANC gentlemen. The first one is, firstly, we are engaging in dialogue. In what dialogue are we engaging in if we're not asking the right questions? Two, if we look at the ANC and its contribution, and I'm not even vilifying their work, it started under the guise of looking at white upward mobility to say, I will provide, protect, and it's not ontological, it's not African, it's not, does not at all inform lived experience in Africa. I see South Africa. So if you are busy engaging, going back and forth, on the basis of what? What are the metrics which will make us realize? And we can't say it's employment. We have far, far deeper issues, Chief.
All right.
And we can't diss Zuma for that.
In the essence of time, maybe Mr.
Sorry, guys. I would have gone on so much.
Thank you. In the essence of time, Mr. Onwabele, are you happy to answer both of those questions?
I didn't get the second part, but it was more of a comment than a question. But then I can respond to him. Mm-hmm. One, you can't erase the work of the ANC in the past almost 30 years. And the work of the ANC includes our discussion here. You know, it's not a tenuous discussion. Even for some of the people who are here are products of a system of the ANC. But as I said, in the ANC, the many problems of people who were sent to government, we have done very bad things, you know. So
where are your hands going now?
So that created all of these problems you hear from these people, which it means there were so many problems to the extent whereby they hide the good work we've done over the years. I want to mention this.
Say that again. Who's hiding the work that you're doing?
I'm saying the previous leadership, uh-huh, yes, had a problem of making its problem the party's problems and government problems.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. And by this I mean that all of these negative thoughts around the ruling party were mostly about those of a persona. Mm-hmm. And it is why today it is easy for a person to forget how they left Ivory Park, how they became who they are, what type of systems they put in place.
So saying it's about leader X instead of...
No. It is not about one person. Mm. But we have had a crisis whereby this one person would do something very big. It makes the whole public to forget about the whole month or year.
Okay, got you. Let's refine our questions very quickly. We have three.
He said to all of us, yeah, I would have loved to touch on his question.
I would like to at least give more people the opportunity to ask their question. I will come back to you, sir, because I'm seeing the PA caps are rearing to go. But let's just pass the mic over onto this side. Ma'am over there, I see you, sir, and I see you, sir, as well. Maybe while the mic is actually over in the room, let's get those three questions all in one go.
Good evening, guys. I'm Phindile Yende, and I'm an entrepreneur passionate about youth empowerment. What I wanted to say is that much as we're having this conversation, we have inherited freedom to a point, and we still have unfinished business. Now, this is how I look at freedom. It's like a relay race, right? The youth of 1976 achieved something, right? The baton was passed on. And they were specific about what they wanted. They wanted Bantu education to be rid of and so forth. Nelson Mandela wanted his certain way of freedom. I mean, sometimes we even blame Nelson Mandela saying that he sold us out. But Nelson Mandela achieved a certain part of this freedom that we're looking at. And freedom will always be unfinished business. That's how I see it. But now, the difference with our youth is that they're not specific in what I want. I mean, I'm listening to all these young, brilliant minds. But they're all so scattered, all working in silos. And I'm just thinking to myself that if we imagined ourselves as the ANC, MK, Patriotic Alliance, looking at all our different strengths and saying, okay, this battle that now we have collectively, if we had collective consciousness, what it is that we would achieve. And I think that's where we are all lacking. Hence, we are able to blame government. And then the youth as well, they blame, everybody's just blaming somebody.
So let me pose the question out to you. What, holding on to the baton and running forward, what do you think we should be running towards?
Well, right now, I think we should be running towards economic freedom. Because economic freedom, then, it opens up doors to many other things. It opens up doors to education. It opens up doors to land reform. It opens up doors to many things. But everybody now wants to be seen. Every political party wants to, I can do this better. I can do this better. There's no collective consciousness. And that's why we are stuck with that baton that the likes of Nelson Mandela gave to us.
Thank you very much, ma'am. I see the red beret underneath your seat there as well. I'm joking. I'm joking. I am joking. I only kid. Disclaimer, I kid. Yes, sir.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Singita Chauke. Like the gentleman here, I also grew up from the dusty streets of Ivory Park. I see the panel here, five all come from the townships. You guys know the living conditions of the people in your communities. The leaders that we have now also come from these same environments. But they left the communities. They now live in the burbs, in the burbs. They only go home just to show off their German machines now. And mine is just a comment. You guys are brilliant. I can hear brilliant minds here. But the problem is that you forget the people that you are advocating for right now. So once you get that powers, I'm pleading with you, just do right by the people that you are advocating for right now. Thank you.
Okay, sir. Question at the back there.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Mohauli Chiko. I am just a concerned citizen. My question is to the gentleman in the ANC. The first one is the biggest problem in our economy. Like he said, it's still a neo-colonial economy. What is the ANC's industrial strategy? So don't talk about we have one. Tell me what is the ANC's plan to restructure our economy from a neo-colonial economy to a modern, thriving economy. I need detail. The second question is, the biggest problem in our democracy has been unaccountability. It's linked to our electoral system. The ANC has been blocking the changing of our electoral system since the inception of democracy. So we are wanting constituencies. The question is, why has the ANC blocked the decision to change from a proportional representation system to constituencies? The reason why I say this is because their former president, Jacob Zuma, stood up in parliament and said the ANC is more important than the country. He was correct because his survival was dependent on the list of the ANC. This proportional representation system based on lists is the issue. That's why Jacob Zuma could say that. Why has the ANC been blocking constituencies is the question.
Thank you, sir.
Sure.
I'm going to emphasize this. Jacob Zuma was a very defective character. very, let me tell you.
No, but you can't say that.
The ANC was formed to serve
talk
the
talk about
country.
The dollar man, please.
I'm
man.
Answering him.
Okay.
No, yes. Because it's starting to really get to the point yes. where I'm going to interfere. I'm not allowed
him.
To speak because okay. he cannot speak about the president of a political
him.
Party let's like that mention. And expect that. I've respected the podcast and him for
very,
too long
very
now.
Clear.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He
answer
needs
the
to
question.
Stop.
Yes.
He needs
the,
to stop personalizing this because
made,
his president is the
mark.
Current sitting
okay.
president
okay.
that's not doing the right thing.
Yes.
He doesn't do this.
Let's hold on.
No,
let's get a moment.
And I've respected the show for too long.
Let's answer it very
briefly. The third time he's talking now about president.
Without mentioning the leader of the other party. Yes.
I've not said anything about Ramadan.
On the floor
mm-hmm.
spoke up you see, because it is a very important fact. The ANC does not exist for itself. Now, it was very wrong for anyone in the ANC to say it is more important than the country. It shows
look
you
around.
Who the guy is. But most importantly, on industry, the ANC is saying you cannot extract raw minerals then take them to another country without
already,
domestic
already, and they've been doing it for 30 years?
Wait.
They've
I'm
been doing it
question.
For 30 years. Come on, man. Don't come and mislead the
but,
house.
But more importantly...
But
more importantly...
Lie like this.
This exporting of raw minerals, it is also interlinked to the question of the PR system. By the way, the ANC has never gatekept in the PR system. Because
yeah,
today,
they stole the votes in
today, you've got so many parties because of that PR system, which we have protected as the ANC. Even you get these people who have taken the gold and the diamonds to overseas, funding parties today. So I'm saying to you, the ANC, one, has never blocked the entry point. Two, the policy of the ANC is that raw minerals must benefit locals. And create jobs domestically.
So let's shift gears in this manner. Let's have a moment. Let's have a moment. And I'm very deliberate by saying let's shift gears in this point because we can get very, very, and I'm not saying we must avoid answering these questions specifically. We can get stuck in this downward spiral very, very quickly. I want to shift gears in this way. As we will bring the recording to a close, but it does not mean that the conversation is over. I want to shift gears in this way and say, going around the room, as we bring the recording to a close, where do we go from here? We've had a robust conversation. There have been many differing viewpoints. There will probably be many differing viewpoints in the comment section as well, but where do we go from here? So that this hasn't been another talk shop, so that it hasn't been another, well, we've ticked that for Youth Day. Where do we go from here? Sembile.
I think firstly, what's most important is that the young people need to realize that the time for them to sit at home and not participate politically is the reason why they cannot make a meaningful difference to the economic situation of this country. It's no secret that the government has failed for 30 years. That's why we're still having these conversations instead of enjoying the benefits of what should have been democracy. Right? We're not disputing that the work that they've done up to a certain point, and I'm repeating a point I made earlier on, was invalid or wasn't necessary. Those people's blood, sweat, tears, and everything that happened was as a result that we are here today to even have this conversation. We cannot ignore the fact that they've done their part. The question is, now that we realize that political freedom alone is unfinished business, that it's not what we seek as freedom, particularly for those who still remain disadvantaged, without us moving forward, what is the next step? We're moving forward, but what does moving forward look like? Moving forward means that we know now that we have a generational mission to get to economic freedom. How do we get that? That question should no longer be about what is freedom in these rooms. We should be having more discussions now to say, now that we understand that the generational mission is economic freedom, we don't care about everything else, you know. Yes, using that as a tool to vote in the people you believe should be. You've mentioned now that we can't ignore the fact that there's already 90 political parties and all of that stuff. But the question then is, how are we going to be effective in effecting the changes that we want to see as young people? Is it by spreading our vote or looking at one particular person, the best amongst us? And I say this all the time, the best amongst us. When you look amongst yourself, you say, who's the best amongst us that we can trust with this engine? We can't trust the ANC, we've seen they failed. We can look at everyone else who's there, but the question is, we must also look at the merits of, when I throw my vote into that basket, is it going to be just another vote splitting, or are we going to be actually collecting power to be able to change policy, to be able to change the economic standpoint of this country? And that's why the MK party went on to say, let's be a progressive caucus. Let's work with other political parties, understanding that we already split, understanding that because we're so split, let's talk together, let's form policies that we all agree on, and use that as a vehicle to say, even if you get the most votes, here's a policy that all five of us agree on, and that we are able to then say, actually, this is about the betterment and the improvement of our country, rather than, oh, I'm in power. If you contribute, I contribute, you contribute. You know, it's the same. But no split, I'm just going to say, no split parties, no coalition will ever be able to drive policy, because if you don't agree, you don't agree, you don't agree. And we're seeing it now in the GNU. It's not working. You say, Pillar Pillar Act, someone says yes, someone says no. There's court cases, there's this, there's that. And the black child who's disadvantaged is still the one that is going to be disadvantaged the most. So I want to say what's very important for young people to note now. Firstly, use your political power. But secondly, identify what your generational mission is and work towards that. And the conversation should be shifting towards the generational mission itself, rather than how we going to vote, what is the Patriotic Alliance going to do, what is the MK party. That's just rhetoric. And we are really tired of that as young people.
Thank you. Wade, where do we go from here?
See ya. Firstly, I just want to correct something. All six of us are from the township. Mm. I grew up in a place called Rivoli, and it is a township in South Africa. Mm. Sia, what we also must, and what I think would be remiss of me, is you didn't give civil society a chance to hold themselves accountable earlier on. What I think civil society hasn't done well enough is to call for accountability, call for checks and balances, and not accept this constant delay of excuses and ongoing politicking and ongoing vouchers at every 4 years, or t-shirts every 4 years, without a list of what has been done and what has not been delivered and why. And accountability means being held to account.
So where do we go from here?
So where we go from here is, number one, I do agree with the sentiment, number one, of coming together as young people. What we must and have to agree on, because the facts show us, is that the average age of our MPs today is 50.
50.
50 is the average age of MPs sitting there in Parliament today. Why are there not more younger people?
Lawrence is ready to answer that.
What has the reluctance been to hand over a baton and let youth lead and have faith in them and understand that your role as you get older is in fact to mentor and transfer wisdom to younger people, so that when they do fail, they actually do know how to get up again and innovate again? Secondly, we need to be looking at what democratic advancement or sophistication or maturity looks like. Yes, we've been now, it's 32 years of democracy. There are things that have worked, there are things that have not worked. The things that have not worked, let us change them. Mm. We are smart enough among each other, and as a country, willing enough to work hard to actually get things done. Let us sit around the table, understand what has not worked and where democratic innovation actually has to set in. What does it look like? Does it work for you that X is delivered, or that X is no longer necessary under this current dispensation? We may not need certain things that were previously progressive for us back then. It's about looking at what is not working, what is actually working, and if that means policy change, political or electoral reform, then that's something good if it means that our people's dignity is being returned to them and we can uphold integrity as a nation, because that's who we are. We are actually people who uphold respect, integrity. The Constitution is lauded across the world, not because it's just something nice to read, but because it actually can be realized if we decide to stop politicking, get together, and get to work.
Politicking was the message of the evening. Lawrence, where do we go from here?
We are in a deep crisis. The country is falling apart.
I think that is the biggest message that young people have to understand and know. Everything is falling apart all around us, and we are not organized. I think the biggest message is, I don't care who you actually go and vote for, but go register to vote, because that's how you go and hold politicians to account, but that's how you ensure that there's more people like you who go represent you. So there's no such a thing as vote splitting. You are exercising your right to vote, and you are participating in this democracy. And I think the biggest thing that we must always strive for as a country is to get a leadership that is new, a leadership that is ethical, and a leadership that will change and move us forward as this country. So young people, go vote and vote for change.
Thank you. Mr. Kutlwana, where do we go from here?
Yes, no, that was also a lovely message that I also want to reiterate and say to the young people, because, you know, it's great that we have conversations like this, you know, it's good that we discuss, and young people, we are smart enough to come up with ideas, but end of the day, we need to find a party that aligns with your ideals and your values, right? If you want to find a party, it doesn't have to be hard, right? You can go onto ChatGPT, be like, which party aligns with this and this value? This is what I want to see for my country, right? So go get registered so that you know that, okay, now that I'm registered to vote, now I can find the party that is going to align with me, because it's very good that we can have conversations. It's good that we can go and march on the streets, but decisions are made in cabinet. And in a party like the Patriotic Alliance, we speak about loving your country. That's what patriotism is all about. If you say that you're someone that actually loves your country, then you're not going to sit back and be like, okay, you know what? The big people are making decisions, right? You're going to be patriotic and you're going to take the step forward and go and make decisions in government. And in the Patriotic Alliance, we put young people in government. Thank you so much.
Okay. Oh, ChatGPT part.
ChatGPT also got me.
ChatGPT.
Advice. Advice. Here we go from here. Hold up now.
Yeah, no, I see I've been warned here. But you know what? I think it's very important for ourselves to clearly and in a very articulate manner to describe the challenges that we are facing now. Because I get worried when we say, you know, the real problem, which, you know, I respectfully so to say we need economic, we need to fix our economy. That's very broad, you know, but clear. Unemployment is affecting young people, and we need to get our municipalities creating employment so that at least young people can see benefit in terms of what, particularly now that we are going for local government election. But while we are still using these big terms and say, you know, economic this, we can't clearly define this big beast. We need to be specific. Unemployment is the real crisis for ourselves as young people, and we need to make sure that we vote for people who will ensure that they create employment for young people so that we can have dignity. Because when you are not employed as a young person, it strips away your dignity. It was for this reason, ourselves as HNSA Gauteng Youth Forum, we went to the Premier's office not only to make demand and say, no, this is what needs to be done, but we also provided solution in terms of what needs to be done, because we need to be in these rooms where decisions are made. We need to contribute positively. And it's for that reason we are saying that given the circumstances where Johannesburg we find ourselves, look at what's happening in Tswana with Dr. Nasipi Moyo. That's clear leadership that has people who can do better. You know, we need the very same thing in Johannesburg. We need the very same things in Ekurhuleni. Issues of drugs and substance abuse. Look at Golan. Look at what President Herman Mashaba have managed to done when he was there.
Thank you.
Mayor of Johannesburg.
Thank you. Mr. Onwabile, you'll have the last word. Talking about yourself. Where do we go from here?
Where do we go from here? One is to advise the South African people to not be voting the people who are hustling in politics, who should be looking for jobs elsewhere. One, you need to elect the ANC to continue governing this country. One.
Okay. He's talking about himself.
Yes.
I said, yeah.
Two. Two, we need to ensure that we hold our government accountable to repurpose our TVET sector so that our skills are used to create jobs.
And last quick point.
And The last part is that we must ensure that the youth speaks in one voice, they collaborate in business, they open some cooperatives, and they approach our government to assist.
Okay.
And that all political parties send better candidates to be on the ballot on the 4th of November.
Here we go. Here's the thing. I thank you. A round of applause to our panelists, please. And a round of applause to you, please. Thank you for being part of this. I do not take it lightly when I thank you and I thank you and I thank you for being part of the conversation. Here's the thing, this conversation is far from over. This was only but a seed that we have planted. And here's my takeaway, and I hope each of you are able to walk away with this. I have been reminded that we all have a platform. Some people have a political platform. Some have the platform of a civic organization. You might have a platform as a researcher on social media, as a platform like Podcast Party. But the idea and the lesson is do what you can with what you have wherever you are. We understand that we've inherited this valuable gem of freedom. We understand that there's unfinished business. Now, where do we go from here? Let's continue the conversation. Thank you.